Hey everyone, we're live, pal. Andrew Zarian and I are here. I guess we're going to talk about Survivor Series, though. Andrew, I know you guys did a recap show, Mat Men. You guys did a Sunday morning recap. So, do you really want to talk about Survivor Series again?
I'll talk about whatever you want me to talk about, Garrett. I can talk about Survivor Series. I can talk about AEW. I can talk about whatever you want.
Oh, well, we'll definitely find stuff to talk about. And it is interesting because of the time frame that we do this show, which is beginning of the week, but, you know, also close to the middle of the week. We don't really get that first reaction to these big shows, to these big pay-per-views. But what we do get is a chance to kind of sit back a little bit and go, okay, what happened and why did it happen and did it make sense and was it good, or were we just reactive to like that excitement of watching a pay-per-view? So let's definitely talk about Survivor Series. But before we do that, can I quickly, I just want to mention a company. You see the hat that I'm wearing. It's not an ad in any way. It's just a couple of good guys created a hat company. I think they're going to try to make it more of an apparel company as well. It's called Canvas Theory. So I'm wearing their hat. It is wrestling influenced snapback hats and really, really fun designs and stuff. So I just wanted to point it out. I've been wearing these during the wrestling shows, the wrestling video shows that I do, because they.
Yeah, I know those guys. I think they sent me a hat a couple of years ago. Really cool guys. Good.
I think they mentioned meeting you. And here's what's funny is when I was talking to them, one of the guys was like, yeah, I love Andrew so much that if I got on a call with him, I'd sort of be like starstruck because I'm such a fan.
Oh, get out of here.
I was laughing because I was like, yep, that's the effect that Andrew has on people.
The Andrew's Aaron effect. Tell him to give me a call.
So usually, you know, I'm a hat guy just from being a baseball player back in the day, but I would like to curve the bill constantly. And that's just the way I wore it as a baseball player. But what I realize is when you do podcasts, curving the bill doesn't quite look as good. And, you know, where I'm working from home, so I'm never really doing my hair. So hats are perfect and they're sporty and we're talking about wrestling. So I think it fits. So I was very I like this hat a lot. I've worn a couple different designs with Dave as well. But anyways, just wanted to shout those guys out. CanvasTheory.com. They're two really good guys. And I think they're going to do some stuff around WrestleMania in L.A. So maybe you'll see them at a little pop up or something. OK, enough about that. Let's dig into this Survivor Series, because before we got on air.
I thought you wanted to talk about the World Cup. Because the U.S. just beat Iran.
Oh, there we go. There's the live update.
So there you go. USA, USA.
So they advanced to the next round.
They advanced to the knockout round. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool.
So wait, are you in on this World Cup stuff?
I get into it every year, yeah. Like I like the U.S. Like I always have like the U.S. is my team, Italy or Greece. Armenia's never making it, you know. So I, you know, my teams are. I only got one team right now. I got the U.S. in here.
Yeah, I feel like a fraud if I get into it because I don't pay attention to soccer generally, and it's not because of the game itself. It's just I follow so many things so closely. Like if I was to really take on soccer, I'd have to drop something else. But so, you know, I'm happy when people are happy who are soccer fans. So that's kind of how I root. I root for my friends and what they want to happen.
I like that. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. You just mentioned that the U.S. won. So I know that's a pretty big deal here. The England game was a pretty big deal for them to come out of there with a draw. So that's the World Cup. It's World Cup fever, man. It's kind of weird.
It's weird
because of the time frame, right? Like they don't usually do it this late.
I should be outside somewhere getting drunk right now.
Exactly.
You know?
That's
I should
what
be
should
out
be
somewhere.
Okay, so you got your World Cup update from super fan Andrew Zarian. Now we can talk about Survivor Series. And before we jumped on, you said that you thought it was excellent. And when I look back on it, I think the show was solid. It was very solid. But I was sort of left, and this is just me sort of creating what I wanted to see or how good I wanted this show to be before it happened. And you know, we as fans, we tend to do that I think I was the same way with Full Gear, which I thought was also a good show, probably better than Survivor Series. But you kind of build up like, oh, you know, we're going to get this. We're going to get this classic match. And I'm sort of in the middle on the Triple H War Games matches here. I know in the beginning
the main
of NXT,
event I liked. The main event I enjoyed. I enjoyed the story of the main event. More than anything, sure. You know what it is? The more than anything else, I very much like the Bloodline storyline and what they're
awesome.
Doing and everything they've done so far. And I think this added more to the entire story. That's why I said it was excellent. I mean, obviously the pay-per-view had ups and downs. There were a couple things that I very much liked. And there was some horrendous stuff on there.
There was
like
a
Ronda
match. Shotzi match.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's why I said that I'm just kind of on this Triple H version of War Games. Now, we had two of them, which by the time the end of this show is over, you've seen everything. You've seen all the plunder and all the gaga that you could possibly want on a wrestling show. And so they did turn the men's match into more of a story. The psychology was backwards because the heels had the advantage, which they were more baby faces than the baby faces were baby faces on that night, which and if you've been following the Bloodline stuff, they get reactions, you know, just like baby faces do generally. But I think here's my problem. We are conditioned to watching the Royal Rumble. And in that match, there is a rhythm to it, which is if it's a big star, the big star comes in, kicks some butt, everybody falls down like bowling pins, and then we rest until the countdown, right? Like that's the rhythm of that match. Boom, Brock Lesnar comes in. Well, guys are getting thrown out, and then he's going to clear the ring, and then we're waiting to see who comes in next. That's kind of the rhythm. I sort of felt that way watching Survivor Series. Like someone would come in, there would be this big display of big spot here, and then people would just rest for like a minute until the next person came in. And I was like, that's not what I used to like about War Games. To me, when I was a kid watching this stuff, and I go back to the very first one, though, they did a lot of that on the road. And unless you were in those towns, you didn't get to see those matches. But if I think back to what my favorite one was, it was probably like 1991 Wrestle War. And the intrigue to those matches were seeing the baby faces beat up a begging Ric Flair, right? Like that was the rhythm of the match was Ric Flair begs off, you know, the heels, they get the 2-for-1. And then finally that baby face comes in and it evens the odds. And Ric Flair's going to get press slammed up against the top of the cage 25 times in this match. But in these Triple H versions, because you're able to bring in weapons, because you're able to leave the cage and go outside, because there's no top on it, so stuff is happening from the top, I feel like it just becomes a WWE main event style wrestling match rather than an actual War Games match. And I think there's going to be some challenges when it comes to Triple H booking this every year, because I already felt that the matches were kind of shoehorned in. Like we weren't ready for necessarily War Games matches like these bloodthirsty feuds. And that's going to be a challenge for him. Like my scenario would be do one War Games match, and then your other big feud, you know, whatever the big women's feud or whatever the big men's feud, do an elimination style match, old school Survivor Series, because I think the Becky Lynch storyline of her going through damage control would have clearly worked very well as an elimination style old school Survivor Series match. But I know they wanted to really pump this War Games thing. I would go away with doing two War Games from here on out, though. I think they should change it up and figure out how to create the equal status, but you don't have to do two cage matches.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a couple scenarios here. First of all, there will be tweaks. I spoke to someone there on Monday, and they said, and I was asking, I'm like, what did you think of the formatting of the match? You know, just generally asking like their opinion. And, you know, a lot of the same criticism came from people within WWE also. Overall, they love the concept. People are very excited that this is a new element, a new gimmick for them to use. But a lot of people did recognize that there are holes in the WWE-esque style of war games that they'll most likely fix. And those would, you know, it was said to me in that way that they're probably going to tweak it next year. I don't know what the tweak means. I don't know if they know what it means. You know, I'm sure they're gonna work through it. But I agree with you also. I don't think it's necessary to have two war games unless you're marrying war games with Survivor Series moving forward. Mm-hmm. Then I could understand why you think that way. But you know, like in this, it's not a scrum. It's a press conference, right? Not a scrum. In the press conference, exactly. Hunter was pretty honest about, you know, gimmicked pay per view titles, and he's like, listen, like a Hell in a Cell could be at any time.
Sure.
But an elimination chamber is not something that you would challenge people to. And the same goes for our Money in the Bank. But a War Games match, you know, if you have two opposing groups that are in some sort of like blood feud, you could do a War Games anywhere, anytime.
Yep.
It's just, do you want to set up two rings for an entire show if you're not going to utilize it? That was always the problem. I know that there are people on the production side that I also spoke to that really find it a pain in the ass to shoot this. Mm-hmm. Because you're actually only shooting one specific traditional angle. And if you notice, you know, a lot of stuff that they kind of catch from the left side was missed because of the awkwardness of the positioning. So, you know, it's really, this is going to be a discussion for them. I know that they definitely will do it again. Whether or not it's a Survivor Series tradition now, I don't know.
Well, they sold the building out before the War Games stipulation was put in, right?
I can't remember. The tickets went on sale when they sold out like everything, right? When there was
hundreds, they were just hot. Yeah.
Yeah, they got hot.
So you don't really need it, but maybe you would need it in years that where they're not as hot with the live tickets, where War Games does actually help you sell tickets. But I'm glad that, you know, the press conference is not technically a real press conference because they're not trying to answer real questions. But for him to say that, to actually go on record as saying, you know, we're going to look at the pluses and minuses and rev this thing up and fix it. I like that because now it's on record. Now people can hold him accountable because I would love to see a really solid, really great version of War Games at some point. And hopefully they do sort of learn from, you know, what they thought maybe didn't go so correctly.
Do you ever think, like, could you imagine Vince McMahon doing these pressers after each pay-per-view? He's like, all right, we have Issa with a question. Issa? And then she asks, like, a question. Issa asks a good question. She's like, any goals? A friend of mine, right? She's like, any idea if you want to go to Latin America for any shows, you know? And Hunter gave like the most political Triple H. He's like, we want to go over. Hunter was like, can you imagine Vince? Chile? Chile's a nice country. Yeah. I like Costa Rica. I like, you know, it's just starts listing countries. I can never, it is a different company for sure. I mean, this would, you know, they've opened the floodgates to media, which is interesting to see, even though it's not a legitimate question. I mean, it is. They're asking the questions. They're not really giving an answer. But I think it's this open door is a positive now.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, the Vince version of that, would he be wearing like the cheaters, like the glasses in this press conference just so he could see people?
Can you imagine he just comes in like a turn up? You know, he changes. He takes his suit off. He rips it off. He's just wearing like a spaghetti strap, Gold's Gym tank top tucked into a Zubaz with like Reeboks. Yeah. Perfect.
Dude, that would be great. You know who I would love to see? Well, again, these aren't real press conferences, but Nick Khan. Like, I'd rather have Nick Khan answer that question than Triple H, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he would be somebody who, like, if they said, you know, Nick Khan's going to, and he's going to take 10 questions, like, I may even like dial in and ask a question, but. So let's go to the bloodline thing, because that was my main interest for this show, right? Was just seeing what the progression of that storyline is. And we got the progression, which is that Sami Zayn, helped his team beat Kevin Owens, set up the splash. And now they're all tight. If you saw Monday on Raw, they are best friends. He is part of the bloodline. And Kevin Owens said, look, and this was really the problem with this storyline, but I'm glad Kevin Owens at least tried to clear it up, which is Kevin Owens is the one who kept turning on Sami Zayn back in the day.
Yeah.
And so it can't be really unfair. It can't be unfair for him. And then he did mention on Raw, he's like, yeah, I'm the one who did all this stuff. So I get it. I completely get it. But this is it is. When have we had a long story drawn out this way that people are so intrigued in? Like, this is why you're watching WWE right now, is to see what happens next. I'm trying to think of when's the real good one. When's the last time they've done something as good as this?
I you know, that's a great question, because I can't remember the last time they did a storyline or you know, anything remotely close to this that A, was as successful as this. B, the attention to detail is at this level. It's fascinating that they're capable of doing this when they really care. I can't remember. When do you think the last big feud like this was? I think it would have been, honestly, I think the story for Drew would have been very different if the pandemic had not happened. I don't know if it would have been as good as this. Probably not. Most likely not. But it would have been some sort of effort that they put in. I'm trying to remember the last decade. You know, what was the CM Punk stuff was interesting, but that fizzled out within like 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
This has been a long-term dedication.
Yeah. They had a hot, like, until the pay-per-view, and then that was it. This is how wrestling was, or I'll say WWF at the time was when we were kids, because what they would do is they would do a Friday night's main event sometime early in the year, and they would shoot the big angle, and then you would get the storytelling of the conflict and the resolution through WrestleMania. But that storyline, you'd get hints of it, you know, in the summer. Like the most famous one, I think, for people our age is Hogan and Savage from late 88. They do the SummerSlam match where I think it's the SummerSlam match. It may have been the Survivor Series match where Hogan like puts his hand like on Liz's upper thigh and Savage, you know, gives him the dirty
loses
look.
Loses his mind, yeah.
Right? But that's the tease to tell fans, like, it's hunky-dory right now, but something is coming. And then, you know, you go to the Royal Rumble, and then they have to face off in the Royal Rumble. So they would do these, and then they would, you know, then they'd have that Friday night main event and do the big angle and, you know, Hogan and Savage brawl in the hospital, right? Like then that kind of leads to the big show. So historically, I think that's why I like this so much, is because they used Survivor Series to continue to tell this long-term story. And we will get some sort of, we will get some more clues at the Royal Rumble. We'll probably get more clues at Elimination Chamber because that's in Montreal. And then we'll get some sort of payoff for WrestleMania. So I really, really like what they're doing. It just reminds me of old school WWF, which is really the blueprint to follow if you want to heat something up for WrestleMania.
They're letting it breathe, which is something traditionally WWE does not have the patience for. But I mean, this is a great question, and I'm curious myself, because I can't think of anything in the modern era, like the last decade or so, where I guess the Shield, right? The Shield would have been long term story in the last decade.
Yeah,
I guess,
you know, a lot. There are fans. There are fans who are listening or watching who, like, 2010's WWE is what they remember. That's the stuff that I can't remember. I can remember everything from the 80s and 90s. But so there might be stuff there that worked, which we're forgetting because that's not the wrestling that we necessarily remember. But yeah, I mean, this is kudos to them. Now, do you think, like, they started this thing before Triple H took over, but I wonder how much of the original idea was pre-Triple H and how much of the original idea is post-Triple H?
I asked somebody there and I couldn't get a direct answer, so I really don't know. It really depends on what the WrestleMania situation is, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of this stuff is leading to WrestleMania. It's obviously leading to Royal Rumble with possibly Kevin Owens, and then Elimination Chambers in Montreal. You know, the great moment for Sami Zayn to be a total babyface in that building. But, you know, there's a number of situations. I don't know. I was told that we're going to get a true idea after Mania of Triple H's, you know, Triple H's WWE.
His big picture.
His big picture, the most accurate way to look at it is after Mania, because there's so much, you know, so many moving parts here that you start planning years ahead, especially with a guy like Roman Reigns. You're not figuring out what you're going to do every quarter. You kind of have an idea for the next year or so, maybe even further, you know, a guy like him. So I think Hunter's big test is going to be going through this WrestleMania season, getting over everything. And then, okay, now it's a clean slate for sure. What are you doing?
Yeah. No, we'd been talking about creative, and because some of this stuff to me, like there's the great things that are happening with the Bloodline. And then some of the other stuff, like the Austin Theory thing. And I'm like, how much different is this than what Vince would do? Probably not that different. So I like a lot of the things that Triple H is doing, but then there's other things where I'm like, gosh, this is the same as what we usually see. Now, the positives, I think, outweigh what I see as the negatives so far. Even if it's incrementally better, it's a positive, right? So I like what they're doing, and then we'll see come post-WrestleMania if his true vision, whatever that is, you know, he can then take the reins and go, okay, here's what I want to do. But they have so many cool stories that they haven't even hinted at yet that they're going to be able to tell. You have Cody coming back, right? We believe he's going to be back at some point. What are they going to do with Brock? Like that's definitely a up in the air kind of thing. Like what does Brock come back for? Is he going to put someone over, or is he going to run rampant in the Royal Rumble? Like those are some big pieces that are still there. And then Sasha and Naomi, if they come back, there's Charlotte who's still out there.
Are you going to take the title off of Roman? Are you going to split the titles again? Does Dwayne play a part in this? Do you have it for the title? You know, these are all fantastic questions. And, you know, this is the fun part about this time of the year, right? End of the year, you're going into Royal Rumble, my favorite pay-per-view. I will pick Royal Rumble over a WrestleMania any day. I don't care.
Yeah.
That is my favorite pay-per-view.
I would have too.
I love the gimmick.
I would have said exactly what you said until they started doing two on every show. Then it just becomes a little bit watered down for me.
Yeah, but still, I'm not excitement. A fan of the two, but I get it. I get why you do it.
For sure.
I don't know. You know, we're going into the hot season, so we're going to be very busy with all the news that's coming out. I'm very curious how they end up taking the title off of Roman. Very curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they have some sort of idea. Like, you don't have to have it fully fleshed out yet because you're still a ways away from that happening. But what is, like, to me, WrestleMania for them, depending if everything lines up, because we just mentioned a bunch of people, right? There's also Stone Cold Steve Austin is out there, that there's that rumor that's out there. And he's, you know, been showing his workouts on Instagram, and then he
jacked arms
and then he comes out and's like, yeah, you know, people are asking me why I'm working out. It's just because, you know, I don't like to look bad. And so he was kind of kayfabing, you know, the whole idea of him coming back to wrestle. And, you know, I told this to Dave, the person who responded immediately was The Rock. And I'm like, okay, are you kayfabing more by being on here, or are you basically telling us you both want to be on WrestleMania? That was kind of interesting. But yeah, like if all the things line up, you could have the most star-studded WrestleMania weekend that they've ever had, because you have guys like Rock, Austin, and Cena who are out there, and let's put Lesnar with them, even though Lesnar's more regular. But you got those four giant names who are historic for this company. And then you have Charlotte and Sasha and Cody and folks like those coming back, and then you have the current people who've been holding it down. I didn't throw Randy Orton in there because it sounds very up in the air with him as far as his back injury. But and then you have like the folks who have been holding it down now. You get the Bloodline, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. You have the possibility of Logan Paul being ready. And I've thrown out that's the idea one, of him facing Cena. So all of these things could, if everything works out well, could crystallize into like one of the biggest celebrity, or not celebrity, but star power WrestleMania weekends ever. Like that's something to look out for.
You know, this notion of, you know, taking a spot away from somebody. I understand that, but it's a different generation of wrestling. It's a very different WWE.
And then you also got two nights though, right?
And you got two nights, but you know, you want as much media attention as possible. And you do that by having people like The Rock or Steve Austin or Logan Paul, or I know it's bonkers, but this is their philosophy. This is how they see it. You know, you want to sell out two nights in a giant stadium in LA. This is the way you do it. Not you can't. Yeah. It's going to be hard to make it just like a wrestling show and sell, you know, 140,000 tickets over two nights or whatever the number is going to be. You know, what is the attendance in that building? It's like 70K, right?
I mean, for football, you could put probably actually it's a good question. Yeah, probably 70,000.
It was exact. It's exactly 70,000. Look at that. 70,240. It could be expanded to 100,000 for major events.
Yeah.
So I mean they have something here that they got to work with.
And I think I'm sort of happy that day one is not happening, because they would have probably had to do some things at day one that maybe they is better off saving, because Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber should be giant with the amount of people that are possibly coming back. And the TVs from January through March, you could literally have a surprise on almost every single Raw if you wanted to, right? Or you can switch that to SmackDown. We just saw Becky Lynch come back, right? And that's kind of it wasn't even that big of a deal, because you know she hadn't been gone that long, but still the amount of folks who are out right now who they could bring back, or who can they could bring back from the past to just to just jump start this road to WrestleMania is impressive, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what they're doing. I would probably be less interested if Vince was at the helm, but because like you said, Triple H as the new guy, he's really got to do a good job, because he's got like they basically put everything in like here's all this great stuff, now do something with it. And I think he's got a lot of opportunity here that I hope we get to see some good stuff from.
I agree with you.
All right, should we move on a little bit to AEW here? I'm actually interested in your thoughts on this William Regal stuff that Dave and Brian have been talking about. I think it was the post Survivor Series show that they did, where Dave thought maybe that Regal only had a year on his deal, and then it turns out that it was a 3-year deal, at least according to the conversations that he had. But then still last night, he was like, yeah, but there's still something going on. Like, I can't really talk about it, but something's going on. And, you know, William Regal is involved in the biggest storyline on AEW TV right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a swan song for him. We know he and Triple H are tight. You know, maybe there's some sort of agreement with Tony Khan and AEW about, you know, if something happened, he could get out of his deal. But I don't know. This is like so wacky to me that,
you know, I can't see him wanting leaving now, because he's in the middle, like you said, he's in the middle of a top storyline. He kind of made MJF the world champion, so you want to know what the hell's going on there.
Yeah.
You know, so he turns on Mox, he doesn't explain why, and then he just leaves the company. I don't see that playing out the way it did. And if Tony knew that he's leaving, I don't know if he would have done what they did. So I'm being a little bit more reserved about speculating about Regal, but we did find out he has 3 years on his contract. I don't know. I whatever's going on, maybe he wants to take a little bit of time off. I don't know.
I wonder he's so that the reason why this even became a thing is because Triple H posted that video right before Survivor Series started of William Regal just yelling War Games. And, you know, that kind of created the hype about this. And I don't know. I would love, I mean, I obviously, when it comes to this stuff, I always lean towards players or wrestlers over management because, you know, just overall happiness and, you know, power to the leverage for the wrestlers who are the ones that we watch, right? Like, that's kind of who I always root for. And, you know, maybe there is something to that allows him to get out of that deal. But ultimately, you just want Regal to be happy, you know, wherever he goes and to be. But, you know, he did feel a little reinvented by coming back to AEW. But he is on TV a lot, which means he's traveling a lot as well. And maybe if he doesn't want to do that, you know, maybe working for WWE is better. But, I ultimately, we don't even really know what's going on. But just the fact that Dave brings it up, you know, it gives credence to the idea that something is going on. He's mentioned it a few different times. So, yeah, something's happening. And I would hope at least that we get to see a nice payoff to this angle with him and MJF and Moxley.
Yeah, same. I would like to see where it goes. And Danielson involved in this, you know, that's a whole different story too. So they have a lot of moving parts here. Just I'm curious to see where they go.
What do you think? Who do you think is going to be MJF's next competitor? What baby face is going to be the guy to I mean, they have such they still have a bunch of months before the next pay-per-view, but so they'll probably do a couple different TV matches. But who do you think will be the pay-per-view guy?
And we were talking about that on Observer Live, and you know, right now it's gonna be you have Ricky Starks, right?
That's
happening.
That's the next match. That should be really fun. That should be really fun.
That'll be a fun match, and maybe we'll see Regal and Bob. Maybe we'll see something there. But then you got to think about, okay, AEW, this title has been a title that's on TV almost every week. It's being defended constantly. Moxley was a fighting champion. So was everybody else that held that title. MJF has been used as a special attraction. So are we going to get MJF on TV wrestling every week? I don't know, but okay, let's go down the list of opponents for him. Obviously, you have Hangman in the mix, right? When he comes back, that's a possibility. Wardlow's a big story here because he did beat MJF on that pay-per-view and then it just went nowhere. So if you're taking the title, the TV title off of him, or the TBS title off of him, or TNT title, I should say. Too many T's. Too many T's here. The ultimate, that is the Universal Television Championship. That's what I'm calling it from now on. So once you get that title off of him, do you put him in a main event picture? I don't know. I think it's too soon. But then the other question is, does MJF hold the title?
Yes.
Or does he drop it at the next pay-per-view?
I think he's got to hold it, at least for a little while.
He has to.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has to. I don't want it to be Mox that beats him. I really don't. I think it should be someone new that has not held a title. It should also be someone that gets elevated. Whether or not it's like a main act, you know, that has not really been in a world title position, or it's someone that's coming up, because this is the title that you build your stars on. This is, you know, MJF is a solidified champion. You know, he looks great with that world title, and his value in pro wrestling, regardless of what you think of him, I think he's fantastic, has gone up even higher by being a world champion. So, you know, people that are getting that title are getting elevated. So you don't want it to go to waste.
I agree. I always have that comment in the back of my mind when Shawn finally beat Brett at WrestleMania 12, and then Brett took some time off and went to go and did some shows and just took some time away, and he was like, you know, I forget the exact language, but it was like, you know, great, you wanted to win it, but now you have to be the champion, and you're probably going to miss me, you know, because I know how to do all this stuff. And so Shawn did not have a great first run with that title. He was, you know, he eventually lost his smile and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that's going to happen to MJF, but it's not like this easy yes answer to, you know, will he have a good title reign? Like sometimes there's problems with pressure and having to be in the main event and having to wrestle. You know, Moxley was wrestling like almost every week, right? That was his kind of his gimmick as the champion. MJF can't do that. That can't be how he does his championship reign. So I would like to see, I don't know if this is a necessarily pay-per-view, but I think his first number one contender should be Danielson, because Danielson could talk, so he's going to be able to carry that side of stuff, and you're going to get the best match out of MJF beating Danielson just by Danielson being there. And Danielson's the total.
And what if Regal? What if Regal comes and screws him out of the title? Yeah. Great story there, right?
It might be a little safe in that sense. But that would be my preferred way, because it allows MJF's title reign to start with like really, really good stuff. The Wardlow stuff, we don't know if it would be great or not, because then you got to book a finish to Wardlow losing, or you know, maybe he gets hot and they change their mind. But someone like Hangman has already lost like a bunch of times. Do you want to beat him again? There's Jericho out there, but Jericho's a heel. MJF is a heel. Adam Cole could come back at some point, but he was already Hangman's. I think wasn't he Hangman's first guy to beat for the championship? So you have a lot of options, but at the same time, the creative could be difficult for some of those options. So that, you know, we're talking about Triple H and his creative.
One thing about AEW, though. Yeah, one thing about AEW that they don't really... And this is a great question, depending on how you watch wrestling, right? I watch AEW because I genuinely enjoy pro wrestling. I'm not really watching as so much for storyline, story-driven content, but I watch it because I know you're going to have some fantastic match, whether it's Danielson or Moxley or Omega, whoever it is. When that is your process, you could kind of plug and play people, and it's like, oh, that's really cool. Like Ishii and Chris Jericho, right? There's no story there, really.
No.
He's just great. It's a cool match for both of them to have on TV. And, you know, I'm sure Tony got a kick out of it. He's a huge wrestling fan. So when you could do that, I think for your title, you kind of buy yourself a little bit of time here, because you could plug and play random people in this match, in any match for the world title, and you're kind of interested in it if it's the right opponent. You could find someone out of nowhere. You know, like Juventud Guerrera. He said, you know, he had plans for it. I'm not saying it's going to be Hoovy, right? At all. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying I do want to see that. I do want to see
Juice,
Hoovy,
baby.
The Juice and MJF, because it's such a bonkers match to see. But you can do that if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And it's not hurting anything, and it's giving the viewers something very bizarre and interesting to see, because it's such a clash of different personas and decades and personalities.
Yeah, I think if I was thinking about kind of where to go here, I would maybe do, obviously you have the match in December with Ricky Stark, so that's your title match. If you need another one for January, maybe you're building up something with someone like Eddie Kingston, and then you do Danielson in February, March. That would be kind of interesting, because I'm just looking for baby faces who will carry their end of things, and it's not just about MJF, you know, him getting a little help here. You know, obviously Omega is still out there, but I don't imagine that he's going to be in that picture anytime soon. Like I said, I really am looking forward to Triple H's creative, but I'm looking forward to how Tony Khan books this guy, because MJF, you know, they've really gone out of their way to build him up this last year, including him, like, remember when we were in Las Vegas, him no-showing that meet and greet or whatever with fans. So, very, very, very cool stuff here. I don't know if you saw this, but Stokely Hathaway was on, I think he was on Renee's podcast, and he mentioned, he said CM Punk wanted to work with the firm and specifically with him. And so he thought that that was actually really cool. But he used the term something like former wrestler or let me see if I can find the photo. Let me see if I can find the quote. Okay, he said, "Who we were supposed to directly feud with is no longer in the company." So Stokely Hathaway has said more about CM Punk than Tony Khan than anybody else has.
You know, this is like the Shield all over again for CM Punk, right? The Shield, he wants to work with a group of young guys and boom, he's at the company.
But that's interesting, right? Because if you look on, I looked on Wikipedia, he is on their roster. I could probably look on AEW's website to see if Punk is still on their roster. But that was, you know, that was news to us. The other thing that Stokely mentioned in this interview, and I'm reading Josh Nason's recap, Josh Nason of this website. He talked about in his decision to leave NXT, he woke up one day in February and felt miserable. He didn't know where he was or what he was doing and decided to commit himself to a mental institution over three days in Florida. He said it was akin to a prison with a cell and restrictions, and that after 3 days, he thought that maybe he was better off mentally than he initially thought. So
I did not know that.
I think it's news to everybody, right? And so what it just kind of remind, and this is, you know, this is related to the MGF thing, which is there's a lot of pressure for these guys to perform, right? That the more that there's money in wrestling, the more pressure there is to perform, the more pressure there is to sell pay-per-views for TV ratings. And it was refreshing to read Stokely and you know, read Josh's report and him just being like, yeah, I had to take care of myself. And, you know, we're so in the weeds on this stuff that if someone is not on TV for 2 weeks or for 3 weeks, we're like, oh, I wonder if they got hurt. They must have got hurt. Where's the spot? Someone did go through, you know, all the video and post it on Twitter. But in some cases, it may be something like this, where someone like Stokely, when he was in NXT, just needed a break and was frustrated or whatever it was. He didn't say if he was depressed. He just said he wasn't himself. And that's something that is refreshing, because I think we have to remember that how people deal with mental health is very, very important. And ultimately, you need to take care of yourself at the same time.
And Stokely's unbelievable, fantastic. And I don't think even on TV, right? We never got to see his full potential in NXT, nor have we seen it so far in AEW yet. I got to see this guy in Evolve. I know Brian is all about Defy, okay? All you West Coast guys, you're all about Defy. Defy, Defy. I get it. It's fantastic. But we had our version for this long with Evolve. We had it for a little bit, and it was, you know, it was essentially an East Coast version of that. And Stokely was a main character there, and he's remarkable. And, you know, we are, like you said, we get so inundated with the little tiny stuff like, oh, you know, he's not on TV. Is he hurt? Did he rub someone the wrong way? Or why isn't this guy in WWE? You know, the reality is sometimes it's your choice. And a guy like Stokely, he recognized that he was utterly unhappy. He's doing the thing that he loves, but he's miserable at it. And that's the worst thing to do, and he got himself out eventually over there. And, you know, now he's on national TV and he's doing something cool. There's so many of those stories that you don't hear about. But the fact that he's vocalizing, he's like, listen, I was having a rough time and I had to go get myself checked out. I appreciate that more than anything else. Yeah, and it kind of adds more to the character and the person. Like, you know, we're talking about a TV show that's still semi-connected to the real person. It's like Hugh Jackman playing Hugh Jackman all the time on TV.
Right.
You know, it gets difficult to separate it.
Or if he was in WWE, he'd play Jack Human.
He would play Jack Human. Yeah. I hear about, like, there are a couple people in AEW that people talk about all the time. I'm not going to mention the names because I don't want to interfere in anything. WWE's interested in these people, but they have zero interest in going there. And the same goes for AEW. You know, it's why isn't this guy there? Because they don't feel like being there for whatever reason in their lives. And, you know, we have to understand that and respect it. I think Stokely made the right decision. I don't know if he would have ever gotten over on the main roster and in a triple in a Vince McMahon world, or he would have even been put on that roster. But, you know, it's great that he has an opportunity with AEW, and it's great that he has a possible opportunity with Hunter now running the show over there. I very much like that character, and I have for years. I'm glad that we're seeing it now.
When he was Malcolm Bivens in NXT, that was my reason for tuning into NXT. It was Malcolm Bivens, and it was Trick Williams with Carmelo Hayes, because I just loved watching those guys do their promos. It was almost like he was speaking to me, because all of his pop culture references were from like when I was a kid, and they were like they resonated so much that he was popping me left and right. And, you know, people who are a little bit younger than me probably didn't think it was as cool. I would like to see more of that on AEW, because right now his current character is a little bit more of like a devious, like mischievous guy. That's fine, but bring back the wise talking hip dude, because Malcolm Bivens was A1, my favorite promo from the beginning of, you know, whenever his run was NXT, I was always looking forward to that show, which I didn't like a lot of the angles. I didn't like a lot of the wrestling, but I liked him, and that kept me tuning in. And when he left, I was like, there were other reasons why I stopped watching NXT, but that was one of them. I want a version of Malcolm Bivens mixed into his current character. It's just more fun, and he's allowed to be what it seems to me is more of himself.
Yeah. Andrew Narchetti goes, his first promo with the firm was bad. You know what? I wasn't wild about it either, but
they've already changed up his. He's already been bounced around, right? It was all, he was with Jade, and then he's not with Jade, and now he's with, and then he got the firm. And so it's, I'm sure, you know, wrestling is moving parts, right? It's not just like, oh, we have this plan and we're going to work this. It's like, oh yeah, this doesn't work. We have to adjust sometimes. But I think he's tremendous. Okay, we have 12 minutes before Lance. I don't know if Lance is doing a show. He wasn't feeling too great over the weekend. I think he had some sort of flu or had some sort of sickness. So we usually do this gimmick with Lance kicking us off the air, but you know, hopefully he's feeling better. I know he was feeling rough.
I get yelled at by Lance twice a week. One on Sunday when he recaps my show to me. I swear to God, this is real. I'm not exaggerating at all. Every Saturday or Sunday morning, I get a DM from Lance, like essentially telling me, generally 90% of the time, he's like, I really like the show.
It's great. Lance and I have immediate feedback.
I love it.
From someone who knows what the F he's talking about.
And I appreciate it so much when I get those messages, because you know what? Who better than a Lance Storm to kind of tell you like, hey, listen, I thought you're on the money with this, but let me explain to you why this happened. You know, like I'll get stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, you know, it's insight. Every now and then I get like, I totally disagree with you. And here is why. And you know what? He's always right. Lance is always right.
I mean, come on.
No, like, that's I very like much appreciate it.
Like that is free for us, right? Like you would.
Yeah.
You couldn't pay enough money to get that kind of help.
People pay
feedback.
A lot of money in seminars to get that.
Yeah, so no, I appreciate it as well. I get a big sometimes when I see the DM come in, I get a little worried initially because I'm like, oh shoot, what did I say incorrectly, right? But usually it's like something else. But here's what I wanted, as we have this 10 minutes left in this show. The Elite doing the CM Punk stuff on Dynamite.
Yeah, very.
Where
cool.
Did you stand? Were you into it? Did you love them just sort of making fun of the whole scenario, or did you think it was a little bush league? Like, where were you when it came to this stuff?
No, I you know, if they do it every week, then I would probably say, yeah, that's a little annoying. You kind of want to progress forward, but they're in Chicago. They knew what they were going to get. They expected to get booed. They expected a CM Punk chant, and they played into it. And you know, they wrestled heel. They didn't wrestle like baby faces and do those things. Kenny biting was, you know, the marketer in me is like, oh my God, this is great. You right? This is great social interaction. People got involved, you know, got people talking and it got the message across. It's exactly what they wanted and it worked. I thought it was done well. Some people were annoyed by it, though. They were very offended by it. Like, how can they do this? I'm like, how could they not? Didn't Paul Heyman come out in Chicago and pretend CM Punk was coming out multiple times? Didn't they do that? Didn't Stephanie McMahon do that also one time?
So, okay. I lean towards you if it's this one time or whenever they go back to Chicago, right?
Like, yeah, whenever they go to Chicago.
That's just pro wrestling. What it made me think, though, as I was watching it is, oh, Punk's coming back. Punk's going to do an angle here. This is what they're setting up. Now,
oh, man, what a great angle it would be, right?
Well, that's what the old school would have been, right? Is you don't do that unless you have a reason, because then you're just creating interest in somebody who's not there and who people may want to see, and you're just reminding them that he's not there. So that's why I thought that. I was like, God, he's got to be coming back. But the way that the Elite work, the way that being the Elite works, the way that they are as heels is they're just these over-the-top comedy goofball heels. I wish they would pull it back just a little bit sometimes, but that is kind of what those characters are, and that's kind of how they became famous, right? Like,
they were always
spoofing stuff all the time. They came out, you know, they were trying, remember when they were trying to build that match? And the reason why I'm thinking about this is because somebody, I think on Twitter, put together a video of them in the New Day shirts. Remember they were trying to build that match with New Day? The six man with New Day. Yeah. So they were wearing the shirts and they brought the trumpet out. So that's why I was like, okay, if it's just this one time,
it's also an investment, I think, right? They've created an investment. So, you know, God forbid something goes wrong with AEW. Yeah. They have a natural, I mean, they have two unbelievable matches they could have. They could have the match with the New Day and they could have the match with the Bloodline. I mean, and they're done. They could be finished. That's it.
Yeah. Who's doing the JOB in that match, though?
You know, WWE, the Bucks will lose twice, they'll win once, you know, they'll do the WWE math on it.
I think Kenny's eating the pin for Roman in that match, I think. And I think he'll gladly do it.
On Roman, man. You know what? That's a match I want to see.
Hell yeah.
Who doesn't want to see
amazing.
It?
That'd be amazing. Yeah, so, it's just, it's kind of funny. I think the risk here is if they continue to do that over-the-top thing and CM Punk is not coming back, you're just reminding people about sort of a negative time in the company, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people got turned off. I think we talked about this.
I did. I got turned off.
Yeah, you
I got
talked turned off about tremendously. This. And so you got to be careful.
Somebody messaged me, and I gave such an honest answer here. Another person, an actual journalist in pro wrestling, and he's like, "Hey, you've been a little quiet. What's going on?" Like, this was yesterday. I had this conversation, and I was like, "Oh, you know, like I'm busy, and I am busy. I'm busy with my 15,000 jobs." And I was like, "And to be honest, like I kind of got burnt out. Like the whole, you know, the May thing with MJF was kind of shitty." Then the whole CM Punk thing, it just took it out of me for a little bit. I'm back now. I'm fine, but I get it. I got really burnt out from it, and I'm sure many other people did. And you know, they did 880,000 viewers on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. It's historically a low night, but the week prior too, they didn't do great either.
Yeah.
This is a company that should be doing at least 1 million viewers a week. So, you know, burnout is a real thing and stuff like this kind of plays a part in it.
I agree. I agree with you on that. Okay, let's quickly look at what is on tap for Dynamite tomorrow, because you were talking about that Ishii and Jericho match, and they have another one that is not really built up for anything other than let's have a really good wrestling match on TV. Dax Harwood against Bryan Danielson. What do you think about that one?
I think that's a cool match. It's a match that Danielson wants, right? That's why they're doing it.
I mean, I think it's probably both of them. Like, if you're FTR, you haven't been on TV all that much of late. So, for whatever reason, they're rarely wrestling in AEW as a team. So I don't know what goes on there, but. You know, maybe it's kind of a dream match for Harwood too, and that's nice because It's an awesome match. It's an awesome matchup. I hope that they get enough time. Secretly, I kind of wish this was on the ROH pay-per-view because...
Me too.
Because then I don't get the picture-in-picture that I just eye-roll through and fast-forward through, and I just hate it. I mean, it's a great pay-per-view match. Maybe they'll run it back. Maybe they run it back on the pay-per-view because the pay-per-view's in, what, a week and a half. So that would be interesting if they did that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a fantastic match, and Dax Harwood is kind of... come into his own as a singles wrestler. I think everyone knew how good he was, but he's had the opportunity to show it in AEW that how good he is as a single.
Do we know what that ROH show has done as far as tickets sold?
I don't know. WrestleTix?
That's what I'm going. I'm going to his Patreon right now.
Do you know the person who runs WrestleTix?
I don't. I've spoken to him, you know, or her. I don't know. We like on DMs all the time because I, you know, when he was starting out, we would source him all the time. I actually Final Battle. No, there's nothing on Final Battle tickets right now. I don't have it. I don't know anything about him, but Wrestle Votes, I know.
Okay,
I know who Wrestle Votes is, and you'd be shocked to know it's me. Just putting it out there. DM him, DM Russ, or tweet Russell Votes and ask, are you really Andrew Zarin? I guarantee he's going to say yes.
And then it's going to be me. A picture of John Alba.
It's going to be a picture of John Alba. There you go.
All right. So what else is on Dynamite? Jade Cargill title celebration. I wonder if we're going to see Bow Wow there. I think if he was going to show up, they'd probably promote that he was going to show up. Willow Nightingale against Anna Jay and MJF promo. So hopefully some storyline advancement with William Regal as well and John Moxley. Do you think they do another match between MJF and Moxley?
I think they will. I don't want it to be now. Listen, I love John Moxley, but I want to see something different a little bit. In that main event picture, but if they don't have anybody, they're going to have to go to him quickly, right?
Yeah.
They got a pay-per-view. They got to do at least 140,000 buys on. So if it's MJF versus Wardlow, is it going to garner that? If it's MJF and Danielson for the title, I think that would be a better draw for a pay-per-view. It's just a matter of what they do in the next couple months. I think they really need to build that babyface positioning on that roster. There's a lot of great characters, but not a lot of true baby faces.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have match 3 in the Elite and the Death Triangle. Can somebody sell this hammer shot, by the way? Like, we just get beat up with hammers and the next match just happens and no...
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, John Moxley will bleed from an errant fingernail scratch to the head, and these guys get hit with hammers and no blood, no concussion, nothing. It's just like, oh, they're just back. And then they're saying, hey, next time, please don't use the hammer. That's cheating. I don't know.
Somebody over there said to me, man, what a great feud Cody and MJF would have had for the title, right? Right now?
Yeah.
Somehow yeah. Cody would have been okay to get a title shot finally. And he's the one that beats MJF. What a great story that could have been.
Tremendous. That would have been amazing. Absolutely yeah. amazing.
Well, instead, he's going to win the WWE title. You're going to be a big hey, shot in WWE. So hey,
let's do it.
Terrible decisions.
You know, that Cody Seth match is going to get some match of the year votes. That's still the one that I remember the most.
Yeah.
I don't think it was the best match, but it's just in my mind just because of the emotional part of it. All right. We're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, I think things have slightly settled down.
Settled.
With your day.
Things have okay, slightly settled. I'm here Tuesdays. I'm here every Tuesday.
All right. Lance is back today, so we got to get out of here.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
For Andrew.
We got to go.
We got to go. For Andrew, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.